Listen, if I'm not in charge, then fuck it. Like, I'm not doing it.
All right. Well, you're going to be in charge and alone and divorced and fat and unhealthy with no friends. That's your choice. You're either in charge of everybody else or you're in fucking charge of yourself and putting all of that crap and that narcissism to the side so you can actually get what you want. Look, if you're a happy narcissist being alone and fucking up your marriage and being a total bitch to everybody you know, go for it.
No, I'm not happy. I'm not happy.
Well, then that's what this battle's about. It's not about your weight.
I agree. I totally agree. I'm mind blown.
Yeah, it's very clear. You either fix this and you get the connection that you want and you build the business that you want and you become the kind of mom that you want and you get healthy, or you are going to die alone as a cranky, righteous narcissist.
I don't want to do that. I don't want that. I don't want that anymore.
Well, that's the fight.
Okay.
The old chapter, the narcissist was in charge. Okay? The narcissist gets defensive when she is asked about her weight, asked about what she ate, asked about exercise, or is shown any other form of support or love or curiosity. Okay? You see how that is like the narcissist diet?
That's a book.
Totally.
I don't want to write that book anymore.
Honey, you already did.
Damn it!
So, let's...
Okay.
Let's turn the page. What do you want this new chapter to be defined by? If the old one was the tamper tantrum throwing... attention-seeking narcissist bitch. That's my title for your old chapter. What is the new chapter? What do you want?
I want to be loving.
Great, loving.
Like, genuine.
Terrific. And what will your marriage be like?
Sweet.
You are very sweet. When you're not pissed.
That's how I got them, you know, by the way.
It's also how you'll keep them, by the way. The hardest thing for a narcissist to learn, this took me a long time. Do not wait until you're 41 to figure this out, okay? Other people want to be with you when you make them the center of your attention. The second you invert it and you realize that when you focus on the other people, you become the choir director. You become beloved because everything you're doing is elevating everybody else. Mm. When you walk into a room and you are not the loudest, but you're cheering the loudest for everybody else, you become loved. When you go to a party and all you do is ask people questions about their lives and you don't say a single thing about your own, even though when you leave, you're going to be like, those motherfuckers didn't ask me anything about me. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Control, calm, loving, connected. When other people are talking about themselves, they think, oh my gosh, Jess, she is just the greatest ever because she's interested in me. That is that's the simple secret to every single human being.
Hmm.
And when you're a narcissist, you do the exact opposite, which is what makes everybody run from you and makes you just angrier. So it's not going to feel natural. But trust me when I tell you, if you take all those skills that you have around attention and you use it to deliberately cheer for and elevate others, you will be shocked at how quickly your friends grow, your business grows, and your happiness grows.
Awesome.
It works for everybody and anybody. Even the biggest curmudgeon narcissists on the planet, you pay attention to them, they love you. It'll work. And you can do it. So name this next chapter.
The new chapter, I want to be the sweet fairy, the sweet Jessie.
I love it. I do see you as a fairy. Flitting about and spreading magic and joy and elevating other people. So I want you to keep this very simple, because the patterns that you're trying to break have been worn in over 30 years, okay?
Right.
And so that's why I talk about old chapter, new chapter. You're going to slip up. You're going to step into the old chapter because you've lived it for 30 years.
Right.
The second that you realize, oops, I'm being a narcissist again. No problem. Turn the page. We're sweet. We're the fairy. okay, apologize. Lift people up. Be connected. Have some humanity for yourself. Okay?
Okay.
Change is simple, and it's even faster when you keep the distinction simple. Old chapter, new chapter. Whoops, I slipped. Laugh at yourself. Clean up the mess. Fly away like a fairy.
Okay?
Okay?
I feel light. I feel grateful, calm. Yeah. I'm excited to call my husband and thank him for not giving up on me and give him some hope of what I've learned. And I think there will be provided some relief for him. I'm excited to do that.
I'm so excited for Jessie too. Weren't you so moved by her honesty and her vulnerability? One of the things that I love about Jessie is, boy, she took that tough love coaching to heart, and she is now kicking ass. I've been following her on social media, and I'm so proud to tell you that she's made a 180-degree turn. All she's doing now is cheering for her husband, her friends, her kids, and she's also become super transparent in her business. So let's talk about the big themes from this coaching session and what you can do with it. I know we spoke a lot about narcissism, but you don't have to be a narcissist to apply one of the biggest takeaways from this session. And that's the secret to improving your relationship with anybody. Take the focus off of you and put it on everybody else. How do you do it? Start cheering for people. The second takeaway from this particular coaching session is that if you have a problem that you have been trying to fix forever and you're not making any progress, just like Jessie and her weight loss struggle, maybe you don't have any interest in fixing it at all. You know, I used to do this when I suffered from anxiety. I would use my anxiety as an excuse to not have to do anything that scared me, and I also used it to manipulate my husband. You see, when I was anxious, the attention was on me, and he was on eggshells, and boy, oh boy, did it work like a charm. So if you're stuck and you can't make headway, just consider, maybe it's not a problem. Maybe you're using this as an excuse to not take responsibility. And finally, I think you know by now my commitment is to try to make change simple and fun. And one of the tools that you learned about during the conversation with Jessie is naming the old chapter that you're stuck in versus the new chapter you want to step into. Now, Jessie's old and new chapters are super clear. In the old chapter, she was the narcissist. In the new chapter, she's light as a fairy. Creating these kind of archetypes of old and new, it makes things super black and white. And the more descriptive and fun you make these descriptions, the easier it is to catch yourself when you slip into the old narcissist, and the more fun it becomes to be able to switch into the new you. And that's just going to help you make change simple and fun. If you struggle with procrastination, this coaching session with Evelyn is a must listen.
My name is Evelyn. I'm 27 years old. I came from San Francisco, California. Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall and I can't go through it. It's just killing me inside. It's affecting my career choices. It's affecting my education. And I know I could do amazing things, but for some reason, I just can't get out and just go and do it. I'm in a big hole right now. That's another reason why I guess I procrastinate, because I already have, I've made a big hole in myself, in within my life, that I don't know how to get out of that hole. Like,
Evelyn and I have a profound conversation that's going to shatter everything you've ever thought about procrastination. You're about to learn that chronic procrastination has very deep roots, and this session, it may trigger you if you've suffered or witnessed abuse, like Evelyn has.
There's this one time we were upstairs in the house and my dad just body slammed my mom. And my mom did not get up. So, and ever since that moment, everything else just erased, and I just picture that in my mind.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name is Luisa. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall.
The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit.
Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins. All right, well, hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
How do you feel?
Nervous. Nervous.
Really?
Yes.
What's happening in your body right now?
I can't explain it. I can't, you know, I'm just very nervous. I mean, you're right in front of me.
So tell me why you wanted coaching. What are you struggling with?
I'm 27 years old and I haven't finished college. I haven't even stepped foot into my career plans and goals, and because I've been procrastinating my whole life, pretty much. I just don't know what it is, why there's something that just does not click. And I guess the thing that sucks is I've tried everything, schedules, to-do lists, reading, writing, journaling, meditation, a gratitude journal, and exercising, and I don't know. And I just hope I could find out why I'm procrastinating.
We're going to figure it out today.
Oh, yay!
I'm 100% confident. You can stop worrying right now because I know we'll figure out the answer.
Okay.
What did you think your life would look like at the age of 27?
I was always this environmental friendly person. So I knew I was going to have a toilet that saved water and a shower that saved water, a house somewhere in the Bay Area with my Toyota Prius, and just like an eco-friendly house and a garden, and not a family yet, but traveling. And then I didn't finish that, dropped out. And then, you know, just been working around.
You feel the pressure?
Absolutely, yes. I feel the pressure. I'm 27 years old. I don't have a college degree. I'm not, you know, making the income that I want. I am not confident. I have a low self-esteem. You know, I'm 27 years old. I feel like I had enough time to figure it out by now.
Do you have a question about whether or not you're going to make it?
I want to say no, but the way I'm heading, it's most likely a yes, you know, like in the morning I tell myself, you know, like I'm going to be successful. I ask God or the higher power to use me for something. I know I could, especially with, you know, the life that I lived, I've seen things, I want to help other people, but I don't know. I just want to be used for something.
I think we all feel this calling.
Mm-hmm.
To want to be used for something important. And we all feel this tension between where we are and what we hope to be doing. And that tension and the space between where you are and that next chapter and that place that you want to get to, that can be either a really healthy thing that becomes a path that's lit, that calls you forward, or that distance can start to feel like a sledgehammer that keeps pounding you in place. because the distance feels so big. And my concern about where you're at is that because you had a defined vision about where you thought you would be at the age of 27, and you're starting to convince yourself that it may never happen. And that we've got to change immediately, because it's very hard to build momentum and to rebuild your confidence if you're having to fight the sledgehammer that you're hitting yourself with.
It makes a lot of sense.
Do you remember one of the first times that you procrastinated?
Yes. I could go back to elementary school.
Okay.
I remember there was a scholarship, right? I used to do a lot of volunteer work since elementary school, high school, et cetera. And I had the most hours out of all the students in my whole elementary school, the most hours. And there was this scholarship for students who volunteer, right? It was like a $5,000 scholarship.
Wow.
And it was the only person that applied was this other girl who volunteered at the library for probably like 3 hours, like not even nowhere near amount of hours I put into.
How many hours do you think you had done?
I've done at least 500.
500 hours?
Or more, yes. I've done, yes, a lot of hours.
Okay, and, so you've got the scholarship.
No, I didn't apply to it. And
did you want to apply?
I did. I knew I was going to win, but I never submitted it, and she won. And I knew that that was my scholarship, but I didn't do it. I did not submit it.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back.
Mm-hmm.
You have the application.
Yeah.
And was there any issue with you being able to fill it out?
I think I just got nervous.
Was there a part of you think that didn't feel that you deserved it? Or did you not want the attention?
I definitely do not like attention.
What do you mean?
I just sit in the corner. Like, for example, when I got an internship at NASA, all my friends were super excited, and I wouldn't tell people. And my friends were like, you're interning at NASA, girl. Like, say it, you know? You know, like, you're a girl from, you know, you grew up in North Richmond, where there's not a lot of people get that opportunity. And North Richmond is a very bad neighborhood, by the way. And not a lot of people have done, especially from where I grew up, what I've done. And, you know, I mean, I don't like the attention. I don't like telling people things.
Well, I think that it's a problem if the fact that you don't like attention means that A, you don't celebrate what you do.
Mm-hmm.
B, you don't talk about what you do.
Yes.
And C, that you don't actually go for opportunities where you get celebrated or where you become more visible because of it. So mm-hmm. Not seeking attention isn't that's not a bad thing if it's not limiting your life.
Okay.
The problem is, I think, that your discomfort with having the attention on you is severely limiting your aspirations and your ability to achieve your goals. You know, what just happened? You just started, like something went off in your head.
I never thought subconsciously I never knew that me not wanting the attention affected me. I've read dozens, a lot of books, and this has never been brought up, I guess.
Well, see, I think there's a really interesting thing in your story that we're going to explore. So one is that you've raised now where you came from, your neighborhood, the stuff that you've achieved versus where you've come from. So that's a huge piece of this. The second thing is that you talked a little bit about how your confidence is shrinking.
Absolutely.
And I see you as somebody who is trapped in this cycle of having huge dreams and aspirations and this desire for a super big, fulfilling life.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like in quicksand. And with every day that passes, you're sinking deeper and deeper into it and getting further and further away from actually achieving what you want.
Yes, absolutely. That sounds exactly how I feel. I don't I don't look down at no one. But the other day, I went to the store and there was this older lady working as a cash register, and she just looked really tired. And I looked at her and I was like, if I don't change my life, that could be me in the future. I'm not trying to talk bad about her, you know.
You're
I don't
not.
Want to put her down, but I just got extremely scared, and I was like, I don't want to be a cash register at a store, but the way I'm going, that's where my life looks like it's going to end up.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that you're going to make it end up like that.
Yeah.
And instead of being the one that got out of the neighborhood, you're going to prove that nobody does.
Exactly. And I always told myself, I never want to be part of statistics. I'd never want to be part of, I think I read a while ago, I'm pretty sure CNN, and it said like 70% of the people don't get out of their social economic
whatever group or class
in. Exactly. And I was like, I'm not going to be part of that 70%. There's no way. But, you know, the way I'm heading, the way I'm procrastinating, the way I'm not doing the things that I need to do to get out of the cycle I don't want to say it. It's hard to say. I could end up being part of that 70%, you know?
And if you are, it's because you actually made yourself. So were you told when you were growing up, were you told that you were smart all the time?
Yes, I was told I was smart all the time.
I know exactly what happened to you, by the way, now.
Oh, okay.
No, I do.
Okay.
I actually do. We're going to fix this.
Okay. So,
So you went to a special school?
No. I was in San Francisco, and, it was completely different.
So did you grow up in like a really rough neighborhood?
When I was in San Francisco, I was in Daly City. I went to a good school, and then I moved to Richmond, California.
Okay.
And that's when, everything changed.
How old were you?
I was 9. And I remember I was like 2 or 3 grades above math, English, and all that. And then, so I would have classes with the older students.
Yeah. What happened to you when you started to see that you were the youngest in the classes and that you weren't getting challenged or pushed the way that you had in the better school?
I slowly started just kind of just giving up. Just like, okay, well, this is how it is. I remember looking to my class. I was sitting down, I was looking at my class, and I was like, I could predict everyone's future. Pretty much all the girls were teen moms. 3 of the guys went to prison. 2 of them are dead, if not more are dead. So I guess just being around that environment, coming from a great San Francisco, great education, great school, great teachers, loving teachers, supporting teachers to teachers that don't care and parents that don't care. And I guess that was a shift for me. It was different.
I think that you're still there.
I'm still there.
I do.
Okay.
I think you never recovered from the feeling of what it's like to have hopes and dreams and people that push you.
Mm-hmm.
And to feel your potential getting tapped and to feel yourself growing and to then go into an environment where all of that disappears and it's up to you to push yourself.
Yes.
You know, tell me a little bit more about your family.
It's okay.
Sorry. Tell me more about your family.
So, my mom and my dad, just my whole life, they were cats and dogs, just fighting. I've seen my dad beat up my mom. And I saw an angry woman in my mom because of that my whole life. I would say I never enjoyed my childhood. I've never been happy. And then in 2008, when the whole economy crashed, my parents split. We lost a house. My dad left my mom. We were pretty much homeless. And if it wasn't for me, like, my mom couldn't use the credit, her credit, because her credit was messed up, but everything was on me. I got us a renter home with my credit. That's one thing I always took care of my bills, just because I seen my parents live paycheck to paycheck and I never wanted to live that lifestyle. Then I had to go to school. I was still volunteering. I was taking care of my little sisters, and I wouldn't really call my mom and my dad a family. Don't get me wrong. As much damage my dad has caused, I do love my dad. And I love my mom. If you were telling me what's the happiest moment in your life, I couldn't think much of it. I would say there's very little things that I enjoy about my family. Like, just my mom, you know, she used to save up, she used to save up like all month, and she'll go buy me some tacos and burritos in San Francisco and then take me to Twin Peak and look at the view, and we would eat the burritos and look at San Francisco. And I would say those are one of the few just few moments that made me happy.
What made you happy about that moment? What was it?
Just not seeing hate, anger, pain. Just not seeing that. And there's not a lot of moments like that, so.
Well, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm sorry that was your experience. I mean, that fucking sucks. And it's a lot. It's a lot for a kid. It's a lot to watch your dad beat up your mom.
That's.
Did it happen all the time?
It did. It happened. Well, they're very different. My mom would say horrible things. Horrible things. Just horrible things. And my dad would just hit her. I think the way I can't really answer if he did it a lot, just because I get kind of numb. I know there's a lot of times I just numbed it out, and I just could replay this one time. Like, there's this one time we were upstairs in the house and my dad just body slammed my mom, and my mom did not get up. So, and ever since that moment, everything else just erased, and I just picture that in my mind.
Do you find yourself kind of going numb a lot as an adult?
Yes, I would say so. I would, you know, like I would say when I procrastinate, I go numb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much that you're carrying. The experience that I have listening to you is, first of all, I'm really moved by just how courageous you are and by how successful you are. How old were you? 18?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, 18.
Based on your credit?
Yeah.
You were able to rescue your mom and get her housing?
Yeah.
I mean, that is unfucking believable.
I don't really tell people. I mean, it's just,
survivor. This idea of the discomfort that you feel with being seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the things that I think really started to cement this trap that you're in mentally, mm-hmm. and you call it procrastination. And it's very clear that the form of procrastination that you have is one where you know exactly what you need to be doing. You know exactly what your aspirations are. And then you get trapped in your head thinking about what you need to do. And then as the time ticks away, you start to become numb about your ability to get it done.
Yes, absolutely.
I think there are two massive things that happened to you that have never been properly put in the past or properly explained so that you as an adult can understand what you survived as a kid. And the first one is you went from a school in San Francisco where people saw potential in you.
Right.
And you were motivated and you were inspired and you were the kid that was going to be the first in your family.
Yes. Yes. I remember one time I said I was going to be the first female president.
Fantastic. Can you run right now? We need you.
Yes.
But I, like, you had all of this inside of you and an environment that was really coaching you to grow how you think. And then you get to a place in Richmond where all of a sudden you were in a place where nobody saw you. Was the abuse happening at this point?
Definitely when we moved to Richmond, there was a lot of fights. And
did your grades start to drop when you went to Richmond?
That's when I noticed that everything just, you know, went down.
And did the fighting and all the stuff with your parents ramp up at the same time?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Especially, I just remember 08, like, I don't know why, but I just remember 08.
It's a pretty shitty year for a lot of us.
Yes. And,
how old were you in 08?
18.
Okay.
18. But my birthday's in February, so.
So you were a great student. You end up, you're top of the class, super pumped, going to be the first female president. You move to a shitty neighborhood. Your parents' marriage starts to fall apart.
Yes.
Your dad starts beating up your mom.
Yes.
You start numbing out. You start withdrawing a little bit from school. And this is where you start to become invisible.
Yes. That sums up my life.
And maybe you didn't want attention.
Yeah.
Because it meant something would happen at home. As your grades slipped, did you get in more trouble at home?
See, the thing is, I wouldn't tell my parents.
So in addition to your grades dropping and your own self-esteem about it dropping, you now have a giant lie going on.
Yes, 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 yes.
And the abuse.
Yes.
And the violence and the financial pressure.
Yes.
Have you ever stopped to consider how much you've survived?
No. No, not at all. I feel like it's just, I kind of see it just, you know, it's just life and I'm surviving. The one thing I do hate is because I remember I would beg my mom to leave my dad. I would beg her. There's always an excuse. So I try not to say excuses. I know procrastination is an excuse, but I hate saying excuses. Because I saw where my mom ended up. Excuses.
I'm asking you all these questions because I don't think that the core issue is procrastination. One of the things about witnessing abuse like that is you went numb.
Mm-hmm.
So any moment in your life, the way that this can play out is that any moment where you're about to have to do something that's kind of scary, where you're going to, you know, put yourself out there, it can trigger these feelings of fear.
Yes.
And the thing that you have trained yourself to do is to go numb. And so I think one of the issues may be that you are in a pattern where you are getting triggered in your life because of stress, and you go back to responding to it like you did when you were 9 years old. You need to go talk to somebody about the fact that you may suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. That witnessing what you witnessed as a kid has given you PTSD. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that feel like it could be true? Does it feel?
I want to say no because I don't want to accept it.
I love your honesty.
But it sounds right.
What are the things that you procrastinate about?
Always school. Just, you know, I wanted to learn how to do calligraphy about a year ago. I said I was. I'm still in letter B. It's just...
At least you did two of them.
Yeah. But everything you did just say, it's true. So I think there's some denial, maybe.
My business partner and my best friend had a upbringing where she witnessed and experienced a lot of abuse.
Okay.
And it was only recently that a very skilled therapist connected the dots and made her realize it's not depression, it's not anxiety, it's not procrastination, it's not bipolar, it's not all this other shit you think it is. You suffer from PTSD. And there are triggers that happen to you in your day-to-day life, like the moment you think you're going to get in trouble, the moment somebody's going to call you out, the moment that you're sitting in a class and a teacher's going to call on you and you don't know the answer and, oh, shit.
Yeah.
That triggers something innate in you and you immediately go numb. Like, that's your go-to. The thing that we know about procrastination is that it has nothing to do with school. It has nothing to do with calligraphy. It has nothing to do with completing things.
Okay.
The reason why you procrastinate is because procrastination is a form of relieving stress.
It is. It is. It is.
What are all the stresses that you have right now in your life? Just list them.
Finance.
Okay.
My mom.
Uh-huh.
She's a single mom. My dad, my little family, me not accomplishing the things I need to, such as, you know, school. I just not graduating from college is always in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's always in the back of my mind. And not being happy and just having a really low self-esteem. Like, all those things just every day.
Well, that's a shitload. Anything else you want to add to the list of stresses that you carry around with you?
I do, but I don't want to talk about it.
Keep going. That one.
Not loving myself. Yeah.
What else?
I feel like I can't love other people how I want to love them. I feel like I'm an angry, bitter person.
You?
Yes.
And you are?
Yes. I feel like it. Like, I feel like I'm just sometimes negative.
Well, I think you have good reason to be pissed off at your dad and your mom.
Yeah, and that's who I take the anger at.
Is there any smidge of this that is motivated by your anger at your parents? I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of watching me succeed.
I do want to prove them wrong. Not that they ever was like, no, you can't do it, but And I don't want to make them proud because I feel like they don't deserve that, but
That's what I'm talking about. Like, I think that there's a part of this that is subconsciously working against you, that you're so pissed at your parents and actually completing college would make them proud. I know it's weird, but I do think that that's a small piece of this. If you're worried about finances and your mother and your father and your family and whether or not you're ever going to finish college and your low self-esteem, you got a ton of stress. So you've got your checkboard and you check off all the easy stuff because you're already holding on to all the hard stuff. And then you're supposed to turn your attention to history.
Mm-hmm.
And history requires your brain to turn on and focus. And your brain looks at you and says, girl, do you see all this shit I'm worried about? I don't want to think about history right now. I want to zone out and I want to watch cat videos. I don't want to, like, get on social media. I don't want to read or text. What? I need a break. I need a break from worrying about mom. I need a break from worrying about dad. I need a break from beating myself up. Can we just zone out on social media? That sounds what?
That sounds exactly how I feel. Like, that sounds like that's the lottery right there.
That is procrastination. It's a way to relieve stress. you zone out on social media and you zone out on Facebook and you zone out and watch cat videos and viral videos as a way to A, avoid doing anything that makes your brain work, and B, as a way to combat the general stress that you feel. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. It's kind of like getting to the root of it. And when I never saw it, I always saw the stump. Everything you have just told me, I've never dug the roots. I've never seen it, never felt it. Maybe I tried numbing it, but I never felt it, or I've only seen the stump.
Right. The stump is procrastination.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, see, here's the thing that I love about you is that you're so relatable. And I mean, even though I don't have the exact same story as you, I can relate to everything that you're talking about. And the fact is, we're all working on the stump. We're trying to like knock the stump down. And the truth is, you got to dig out the roots, because it's never about procrastination. It's about the stress that's causing you to procrastinate. It's about the unresolved bullshit from your past that is still with you right now. And in order for you to get all those things that you want, and there is no doubt in my mind, Evelyn, that you can get everything that you want, that you will be a very successful and a very happy woman, and you will get all the things that you dream about. But you will not be able to do it until you free yourself of all of the burden from your past that you are still carrying forward right now. Like, the reason why you can't get your history homework done is because of what you witnessed as a 9-year-old. The reason why you cannot complete school is because of the pressure you felt as a high schooler to take care of your mother. The reason why you don't seem to be able to break through this habit of procrastinating all the time and this numbness that you feel is because of the fear that you felt in that school and in your household. What do you, as a 27-year-old right now, need to go back and tell the 9-year-old? What did no adult tell you that you wish somebody had?
As simple as it sounds, I just want to say, like, I would tell him, I'll hug myself and tell myself it's going to be okay.
It wasn't okay.
It wasn't.
Did you feel invisible in that school?
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, there's something else that I think it's really important for you to understand. So there's a professor that teaches at Stanford. Her name is Carol Dweck. And she's written this incredible book called Mindset. And she is the badass PhD that about 20 years ago discovered that there are two kinds of mindsets that people have. So there's a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And one of the things that I want you to understand is that when you have a growth mindset, what a growth mindset means is that there's really no limit to what you can learn. There's no limit to your potential. That you're the kind of person that knows deep in your bones that if you try, if you work a little bit harder, if you keep at it, that you will succeed, that you will get the hang of it, that you will learn, that history will get easier, you know, that it'll all work out. That's a growth mindset, okay? Through hard work, you can achieve what you want. A fixed mindset is when you think that your potential has a limit. One of the reasons why I asked you if you were constantly told that you're smart is because if you're told that you're smart early on and you are praised when you get good grades, what can happen is you can develop a fixed mindset. And what that means is, through no fault of anybody, you're told that you're smart through first and second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth grade, and then suddenly you move. And suddenly things get hard, and suddenly your grades start to plummet, and suddenly you now don't think you're smart enough to succeed.
That's exactly how I feel. I tell myself that secretly.
Do not do that anymore. You're no longer allowed to do that. There's a number of things going on that we're breaking apart, because I want you to understand that there's some simple things and there's some deeper things that require you to talk to somebody professionally. The simple things is fixed versus growth. So you have been suffering from having a fixed mindset. This is a very simple thing to change, by the way. A fixed mindset means you're stupid or you're smart. And if you get a bad grade, it means that you're not smart enough, right? If you get a good grade, it means, well, I'm smart enough for that. It'll be life-changing for you if you get away from saying you're smart or you're dumb or you're stupid or you're not good enough, and you switch into having the kind of mindset where you say to yourself, well, if I didn't succeed, it's because I didn't work hard enough.
Right.
And when you do well, this is really important, whether you do something great by your mom or you do something good at work or you do something good in a class, that you say to yourself, I worked so hard. I deserve that.
I've always wanted to say that. I want to say that. Played it in my mind, my vision.
So that's one thing that I want you to walk out of this with.
Okay.
When you tell a kid that they're smart and then suddenly they start to fail, they think that they're not smart enough. And then it becomes stressful to be in academics because you think that you're going to be found out and you think that you're not smart enough. And nope, actually it's a very simple fix. We just have to teach you to realize it's all about how much work you put in.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's exactly how I feel. I mean, I understand there's bigger problems, but this right here is the stump.
Yes. Yes. One of the reasons why you don't go back to school is because you don't think that you're going to succeed?
Yes. And I just feel like just dug myself in a big hole that how am I going to get myself out?
Mm-hmm. And the thing I want you to know is while you've done it for 27 years, you don't have to do it a day longer. You can be happy. You can finish college. You can have a toilet that's eco-friendly.
That just made my day.
What are you present to right now?
Everything. I'm trying to just soak it in. I'm enjoying it. And it feels like, hey, Evelyn, you're not stupid. You're not, you know. I can't explain it. It does feel like it feels a little free.
So a lot of what the show is about is helping people figure out the next chapter. Mm-hmm. And in order to start the next chapter, you have to complete the chapter you're in. And until you get the lessons from the chapter that you're in, you ain't going forward. The interesting thing about you is that if we can get you to start to describe who was Evelyn at the age of 7 and 8 before you moved, those are the characteristics that will define the next chapter.
Okay.
And then all the work that you really need to do with a professional, because you are a victim of abuse. You witnessed abuse. You moved to a very toxic environment. You became the adult in your family. You are a survivor, and you need to process this stuff with somebody, okay, so that you can really own it and be proud of what you've survived. But what I want you to talk about right now is describe Evelyn at the age of 5, 6, 7, the kid that was in that school. What were you like?
I would say, I remember I just loved singing, dancing, enjoyed going to school. My mom couldn't afford a car, so she would walk me to school, but I loved it. I loved every step of the way. You know, just being in a safe environment. I didn't feel like there was going to be a drive-by. Believe it or not, there was a drive-by in my elementary school in Richmond. I mean, I didn't know what drugs were. I knew when I moved to Richmond, I knew what drugs looked like. I knew what a dead body looked like. I knew what a gun looked like. And I never... Before, I was safe. I was safe, and and going from a safe environment to a scary environment.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could say that I was happy when I was younger.
So Richmond Evelyn versus Daily Evelyn.
Oh gosh. Okay, so Richmond Evelyn, very angry and doesn't love herself.
Now, Daily.
Daily City. I just remember spending hours and hours in that park. I called it my park. just remember just, I was very independent. That was a light.
Wow. Making me get choked up. Yeah. It's hard when you're a light, when somebody or something dims that light. You're really hard on yourself.
Yes.
And so anytime you catch yourself procrastinating, I want you to, number one, stop and forgive yourself for a minute.
Okay.
So if you're being light and if you're being curious and if you're being, you know, happy, mm-hmm. and if you're willing to try anything, what are the things that you're going to do when you get back home?
I do know exactly where I need to start.
Where's that?
The roots.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much damage that caused. And I feel like that's the first thing I need to focus on.
So are you going to get a therapist? You need to go talk to somebody professionally about this. This is bigger than trying to sort it out yourself.
Okay.
I can't diagnose you. Truly. I mean, you are a survivor of abuse and you have never actually properly addressed it. A year from now, you've gone to see somebody and you've really dug at these roots.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, what are you doing? What's your life look like 1 year from now?
Yes. I love myself and everyone around me. And I'm happy because I'm getting closer to finishing my bachelor's at UC Berkeley.
UC Berkeley? Holy shit. Girl, you must work hard.
Yeah.
Woo! I've been using Richmond Daily, but I want you to put a label on the next chapter.
I'm going to call it my glow up.
That's fucking hot. My glow up. Let's say that you catch yourself procrastinating. What do you do if you're in your glow up chapter?
Ooh. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. A blast off is party time. There's no time to procrastinate.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
And what else has changed about your life in the glow up?
I've accepted my past. I forgave myself to know that it was not okay. Yeah.
How do you feel?
I can't even explain how I feel. I feel bad for beating myself up. I feel amazing that I know why I procrastinated when this whole time I thought I was just a loser. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Scratch. And I'm just excited. I am really excited.
I'm so excited for her too. And you know what? Evelyn is on fire. She wrote to us the very next day. She's already signed up for sliding scale therapy and registered for an information session about returning to Berkeley. The key takeaway I want you to understand and embrace is that procrastination has nothing to do with your ability to get things done. It's just a form of stress relief. And if you suffer from procrastination too, you gotta understand that stress is the problem and you've got to go to the root. And the second takeaway reinforces something we talked about in the first coaching session with Kim. And that is the power of focusing on what happened rather than on what's wrong with you. What's wrong with you is the stump. You gotta go to the root. And that's what happened. And when you go on this kind of deep inquiry, it might be dark, it might be painful, and it's really important to do it with a professional. The final thing I want to say is, you know, when you hear the word PTSD, it's easy to think that PTSD is limited to people who have experienced trauma during war. But what we're discovering is that childhood trauma creates PTSD too. And you know who can do a much better job summarizing all of this up for you than me? Evelyn.
Guys, try to find the deep problem, the root, whatever that is. Go back, you know, as a young age or whatever the problem is, and figure that out first. Because I feel once Mel talked to me about, like, my family, Richmond, Daly City, it just all clicked. It just all clicked. Like, it's like, okay, that's the problem. Not my procrastination. And just know that you're not a procrastinator. There's something else out there. If I could get through this. Because I honestly felt like I could never get through this. That they could also get through this.
In this coaching session, you're going to meet Steven. Now, this guy is literally paralyzed by the fear of what other people are thinking.
My name is Steven Hill. I am 25 years old. I am from North Carolina. The last 2 years of my life has been, it's been torture. You know, it's been a very long 2 years. It's been like my own personal hell. Locked in my mom's house at 25 years old, laying on her couch for 2 years. I'm here to meet with Mel Robbins because I feel like meeting her and her helping me with personal issues would just help push me into becoming the person that I want to be.
Well, I'm going to give Steven a push, all right. We don't call this show kick-ass for nothing. But before anyone can become the person they want to be, you got to first accept responsibility for your role in keeping you stuck where you are. And Steven's about to discover that ain't easy. What's happening? Why are you getting upset?
Not upset at you, just...
I don't give a shit if you are.
You're revealing things to me that I need to hear. Like me being manipulative. You know, I thought others were manipulative. I thought they were the bad guy. Like they were the bad guy, but I'm manipulative. I never thought of it like that.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Asha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name's Liz. I'm from Brazil.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing. Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall.
The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit.
Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins.
Hey!
Oh, my God, this is crazy. I'm actually meeting Mel Robbins. I think I'm going to cry. Oh, my God. Look at you. You look, like, really... It's you.
It's me. See? Oh, I'm real.
Oh, my God. It's like looking at an angel. I'm so excited to see you.
Oh, my God.
Tell me, why are you here? What are you struggling with?
I am struggling with living to my fullest potential.
Okay.
I sit around and I wonder, are people judging me? Are people looking at me like, look at him, look how much weight he's gained? You know, whenever I'm back home and I go out in public, which is very rare,
Like, describe very rare.
maybe once a week. I mean, once every 2 weeks.
Wait, hold on.
Sometimes
you
once a month.
You don't leave your house more than once every 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'm at home the whole time in my mom's house.
And you don't leave?
Yeah, I might go
out. Because you're afraid people are going to judge you?
Yes. Whenever I go out in public,